Welcome to another episode of the Functional Nerds. This is number 38. My name is Patrick Hester. I have a cold. And John, I sense a disturbance in the force.
Oh, yes, yes. We for our interview this week, we have a force-disturbed individual that we talk to. Anyway, I'm John Anilio. I write songs about science fiction and fantasy. You can get lots of my stuff over at johnanilio.bandcamp.com. You can follow me at twitter.com/johnanilio. I also do a video blog for wired.com called Geek Dad Guitar Lessons. And as Patrick mentioned, we were fortunate enough to talk to author Joe Schreiber today. And Joe is the author of several horror novels, including two set in the Star Wars universe. So we were psyched to get a Star Wars author on the show. His two books are Death Troopers and Red Harvest, which just Red Harvest just came out, and found him to be a great interview, great guy, and lots of interesting things going on in his world. So I think you're going to dig the interview. All right, and on the line we have Joe Schreiber, who is the author of quite a few books, but the two books that I read are the new Star Wars books. There's Death Troopers, which came out a little while ago, and his new book, Red Harvest, which I believe is now out in hardcover. So, Joe, say hello.
Hi, how are you guys?
Oh, we're good. Great, Joe. Thanks for joining us today, and we want to talk a little bit about the two books that you have out in the Star Wars universe, Death Troopers and Red Harvest. And these are sort of being marketed as Star Wars horror novels. And in reading a little bit of your bio, I know that's kind of what your background is writing more horror-based stuff. And I was curious as to how you got involved in writing these books for the Star Wars universe. Did you pitch the idea to them? Did they contact you? How did that work?
Well, it was sort of the last thing I ever expected to happen because I'd written a couple horror novels for Random House Del Rey books, and they were just standalone kind of original horror novels that I'd written. And my editor there at the time, Keith Clayton, had been, and I guess still is, sort of associated with the whole Star Wars EU. And they were at a convention somewhere, he and a couple other people, just sort of talking to the bar about how cool it would be to do like a Star Wars zombie novel. I think that's essentially how it started, is a conversation over a bunch of beer. And Keith had said, you know, well, we've got this guy, Joe, who's a horror writer. We should have him take a swing at it. And literally, you know, at one point then my agent contacted me and said, you know, Keith wants to know if you want to write a Star Wars zombie book. And that was literally the beginning of the conversation. And I immediately, of course, said, yeah, absolutely. I'd love to, you know, take a shot at it, and came up with some really general ideas, just things that had immediately come to mind about aspects of the Star Wars universe that could be really more creepy and scary than necessarily zombie-based, more atmospheric, almost, like things that I remember kind of scaring me about the original Star Wars movie when I saw it when I was 7 years old. And I thought there's a ton of potential here for creating a suspenseful, supernatural story in that realm, depending how much latitude they're willing to give me. And it turned out they were willing to give me a ton of latitude. So it was that's sort of how it started.
Great. Well, you know, like I said, the books are sort of being marketed as a Star Wars horror novel. And I remember when Death Troopers came out, and I remember seeing that great cover of the Stormtrooper helmet.
That was a great cover. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who did the art on that? Anyway,
I think that they went outside. They went out of house, and at some point they had told me that it was a design company that did the Saw posters. Mm-hmm. I don't know the name of the designer necessarily, but that was certainly a bizarre and awesome moment when everybody first saw that cover, myself included. I almost thought it was a joke at first. I remember them sending it to me and really, you know, wondering if Lucasfilm had signed off on this to begin with, because I was just kind of stunned. And then once I realized it was real, I was just freaking out. But it was fantastic.
Well, and I think it really got a ton of attention on like all the science fiction blogs and the review blogs, and I remember thinking, oh well, that's, you know, I personally don't generally read a ton of horror. I tend to read more straight up science fiction and fantasy. And I remember thinking like, oh, you know, that's kind of like almost gimmicky. And when I when I read I don't think there's anything wrong with having a gimmick because it got a ton of attention. But in reading Death Troopers, it does not read gimmicky whatsoever. It's just a good story that has sort of a little more of a horror element to it. But I think it fits nicely in with a lot of the Star Wars extended universe stuff. And just, you know, a good, you know, a good story set in that world. John DiNardo, who is the kind of the head of SF Signal, which is an aggregate sci-fi blog,
and we do a
podcast with them as well. But anytime we end up talking about Star Wars on the podcast, he and I are always like, you know, why aren't there five different Star Wars TV shows on right now? Why aren't there? You know, I think the universe is so large, and there's been so much sort of hinted at. Why not have someone with a horror background write a couple novels in the Star? I mean, it works perfectly well.
Hey, John, to be honest with you, the reason that there's not five different Star Wars television shows, it's called the Star Wars Christmas Special.
Oh, yeah, I guess they kind of burned on that. Well, anyway, Death Troopers takes place sort of right before the original Star Wars movie. It takes place on a prison ship, and then they encounter a Star Destroyer. And in Red Harvest, the new book, it takes place quite a few thousand years before the movies at a Sith Academy, which I thought was such an awesome setting for it. So maybe why don't you tell us a little bit about, I know you said in terms of putting Death Troopers together, you kind of threw around a lot of ideas before you settled on that. What made you decide to settle on really both settings? First, let's talk about Death Troopers first. What made you decide that setting first?
Well, Death Troopers definitely came out of a sense of like, you know, what are the aspects of Star Wars that really could potentially create a situation that, to touch on something you said earlier, the idea of how gimmicky it could be, obviously there's a huge potential for a bad gimmickiness when you're dealing with something like that. Like the whole, it's that meets this, you know, that's the classic Hollywood, you know, blunder, you know, it's Die Hard in a, you know, rehab clinic, or it's, you know, constantly people trying to match two things up that don't work out at all. And there are a thousand ways that could have gone completely wrong. And when I sat down to write, you know, Death Troopers, the idea was, I want to create a world that there's a genuine sense of suspense, there's a genuine sense of terror there, something that could potentially work if you took the Star Wars elements out, but would work way better with those elements involved, and in the end, sort of would need those things to really be fully what it, you know, meet the potential for what it is. So in that sense, I definitely wanted something that I wanted to create a setting that was, you know, had aspects of emptiness and desolation to it, but at the same time, you know, was obviously not, you know, empty and desolate. There was a threatening force on that you could hold back on for a while and really sort of build up anticipation before you paid it out. And so Death Troopers, you know, the whole notion of this enormous, you know, half-mile-long ship that would seem empty. I mean, I just loved that idea, and the more I thought about it, the more I loved it, the more I felt like just exploring this as a writer is going to be a lot of fun. And as soon as you realize that, you know that it's going to be okay, that the project is going to work, because you've relaxed and you just sort of intuitively started to understand why it's going to be a good, scary story. So with Death Troopers, I remember, you know, distinctly loving going to work on that book every day, just not being able to wait to get back into that setting and see what I found there. It was a very intuitive, sort of just organic experience. Red Harvest was very different. Red Harvest was written and sort of rewritten again over a course of about 10 months, based on a lot of good notes I got from my editor at Del Rey and from Sue Rastoni at Lucasfilm, sort of guiding the way that story would go. And I think part of it was, I mean, as an old Star Wars fan and moviegoer, the notion of the Old Republic wasn't as deeply embedded in my consciousness as, you know, A New Hope in that whole time frame. So sitting down to write that, it definitely took more time, and it was definitely more of a process for that second book.
Did you look at any of the Dark Horse comics set in the old era?
I did. I looked at those, and what I really, you know, I remember finally distinctly getting excited about the whole setting when I sort of realized what you could do with the Sith Academy. It came out of a long, long conversation with Shelley Shapiro at Del Rey about, you know, what really, what it would be like to be surrounded with these Sith acolytes, like who these kids really were. I mean, you'd have just, you know, very angry, you know, potentially just very destructive, you know, fundamentally unsound kids that you'd have with these ridiculous powers, and they'd be adolescents as well. And they would sort of be your main character, so they couldn't really be wholly bad. Like, you just couldn't paint them black and have them be these, like, black hat characters. And as a writer, that was a great challenge. And as a, you know, as a storyteller, I felt like there's a lot that you could do with these characters. And that's when that book became a lot of fun to work on as well. But it took a long road to get to that point. And when it finally did, I remember feeling really good, because I was like, okay, this Academy is going to be a cool place to sort of have everything go wrong.
Yeah, well, you know, I haven't read a ton of Star Wars stuff in the past couple
of
years. Yes.
I just realized, in creating the Sith Academy, Joe, you're kind of like the anti-Kevin J. Anderson.
What, really? Why is that?
Well, didn't he create, like, the Jedi Academy books?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's awesome. True. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it was just like, you know, I felt like these angry, I like the idea of, like, angry teenagers that in some sense you would still kind of not necessarily like, but definitely sort of understand on some level, because, I mean, who hasn't, you know, been 18 or 17 and just pissed at the world and feeling like, you know, I've got these abilities and expectations, and basically, you know, if they would just turn me loose, I would just wipe them all out. And that inherent adolescent selfishness that is a lot of fun to go into, and works well once you add an element of The Walking Dead to it.
Nice.
Well, definitely. And you know, the feeling I've gotten from reading Red Harvest so far is that, because it is a very, you know, having sort of these troubled Sith teens as, you know, most of the main characters in the book, as a reader, you know, it's not so clear cut, like, well, who's going to survive this? Like, what's, you know, and I haven't finished yet. I still have about 50 pages left. So in that way, it's a very unique reading experience, because a lot of times, you know, it's like, all right, well, they're not going to kill this character because they're the good character. But because there's such a sense of, you know, gray about it, it's like, well, we don't know, like, who's going to. So I'm really enjoying that as a reader. So.
And as a reader, and I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, to my mind, nothing is more annoying than when you're reading a book and you realize that the author has a crush on this character or that character, and whatever else happens, no matter how he puts him, you know, through the paces, that in the end, you know that it's going to survive, whether it's, you know, a kid or your hero or whoever it is. And I feel like, you know, I've always loved books where you just, like, holy, you know, you just realize, like, the writer could do anything at this point. Stephen King will write a book like that once in a while. You know, he'll create a character you really like and then kill him off at the end, and you just feel like, it's good to know that you're in the hands of somebody who's willing to basically sacrifice anything to keep the story compelling and surprising at every turn. That was sort of a misstep in an early notion of Death Troopers, was I had Han and Chewie in that book a lot more than they were in the finished version. And, you know, and I sort of had this conversation with Del Rey, and they were like, look, you know, you're free to use these established characters. Just know that the price you pay is that no one's really going to worry about it. You just sacrifice a ton of suspense and narrative momentum by putting characters in that we know are going to survive the book. And of course, they were totally right about that. And it forced me to come up with characters that were original and as compelling as those characters that you could potentially really put in harm's way and might not walk away from it.
You know, Joss Whedon was always good about making you care about a character and then killing him off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was going to mention, you know, you'd mentioned George R. R. Martin earlier. You know, I think that has a lot to do with the success of his recent books, is that, you know, in reading A Game of Thrones, you know, a pretty major character gets killed in that. And I remember the last couple hundred pages of that book just feeling like, well, this character has to come back. This is the main guy. Like, you can't kill this guy. And I think when you finish reading a book like that and knowing that, like, oh, all bets are off, like, anything can happen here, and it makes it very compelling reading from that point on, you know. So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, are there any plans to do any more books in the Star Wars universe? Is there anything kind of underway there?
I don't know. It's a funny thing, because with Death Troopers, like, as soon as the cover art hit the internet, they were like, be ready to do another one. Like, the reaction was strong enough that they were just like, when can you get the next one done? And I was like, oh, well, you know, soon, I guess. And at this point, we've talked about it a bit more, and they've actually said, well, Lucasfilm wants to know what your ideas for calling this whole, you know, series is going to be, because we can't really call it the Death Troopers book. So I was like, oh, is there going to be a franchise? And they're like, we don't know. My experience with a lot of that stuff is I find out when everybody else does online. When I find out what's going on. That's the first time I saw the cover art for Red Harvest is when I came across it on the Star Wars, you know, website. So I find out when the world finds out, for the most part. So at some point I'll find out that I'm writing another book, and then I'll start writing it.
That's good. Now, why don't you tell our listeners a little something about some of the other books that you have out there, because you have a lot of other books out there that are not Star Wars books. So maybe you could tell us a little something about those that people can check out.
Well, there's a book called Chasing the Dead that I wrote back in about 5 years ago. It was sort of the beginning of all this, and I never really considered myself a horror novelist as such until I had kids, and then I wrote this book called Chasing the Dead, which is about a woman who's, you know, young daughter is abducted, and she gets a phone call that says, if you want your daughter back, you know, go to this, you know, this place and dig up this body that's been hidden here, and you have to put it in the back of your car, and I'm going to give you a map, and you need to drive it through these towns. And what she realizes is these towns are in, you know, have a history that as you drive this specific route through them, that it brings the dead back to life, and that she's being sort of manipulated into this situation by a, you know, this supernatural force. And it's a sort of a real-time type of book. It takes place over a period of about 12 hours on like a December night in Massachusetts. And after that, I wrote a book called Eat the Dark, which was another sort of one sitting type real-time read about a hospital that's being closed down and a serial killer who gets loose inside of it, sort of based on this job I was working at the time, working at the midnight shift at this trauma center near where I live. And I sort of got this reputation as a horror writer from those two books, and worked from there on, you know, trying to get rid of that reputation. That's what you do. Once you get a reputation, you try to get rid of it. And the Star Wars thing sort of came along as a weird sort of tributary to all of that, and offered me a chance to do something a little bit different. And I have something really kind of totally different coming out next year, which is a young adult novel that I wrote, again, just sort of on a lark without really thinking, oh, I'm going to be a young adult novelist now, about a teenage guy who realizes that this female foreign exchange student that's living in his house is actually an international assassin, and she has to, like, go to New York and kill five people before she flies back to Lithuania, like, the following week.
Wow.
And sort of this John Hughes meets Luc Besson kind of thing called Au Revoir, Crazy European Chick is coming out next year. So my work is really sort of all over the place, and it's kind of nice because it gives you the latitude to do different things, sort of the way the Star Wars books give me a chance to do something different as well.
Yeah, and I'm looking at your bio now, and I had a couple questions for you. One, it says that, you know, you've worked as an MRI tech, and I guess you kind of answered this a little bit already, but I wonder if sort of working in the medical field has anything to do with, you know, you're sort of writing sort of these more sort of horror kind of novels. Do some of those experiences, you know, kind of play into your writing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's still a job that I do now. And I mean, for example, I spent all morning yesterday starting IVs on patients. I look at blood all day. Literally, I'm looking at blood all day long. And there's definitely a medical aspect, even to Death Troopers. I mean, I really wanted one of the characters in that book to be like a medic on this ship, because I wanted to, like, get a look at what alien, you know, anatomy would be like. What would it be like to have to start an IV on a Wookiee? You know, it'd be a little bit different. You'd have to find the veins for all that hair. You know, just stuff like that would gave me a chance to just, like, think about it and through that prism of medical sort of science. So, yeah, stuff is always kind of on my mind all the time. You get exposed to all kinds of weird stuff, both literally and figuratively, when you work in the medical field.
Yeah, was it, there's a pretty famous, I guess he's a thriller author or horror, is it Robin Cook that was a doctor? Is that who I'm thinking of?
Yeah, he was a big-shot doctor in Boston. I've never read any of his stuff. He, to me, was one of those guys who was always, I saw his paperbacks at airports and, you know, garage sales, but I never picked up any of his stuff. I was never a huge, like, I don't think I was ever a huge, like, mainstream thriller reader so much. Like, I never read those guys like Robert Ludlum or Robin Cook. I was always the guy picking up the weird, like, paperback original, you know, science fiction or horror or fantasy books at the grocery store by the guys that nobody's ever heard of. Those were the things I tended to read more often.
Yeah, no, I hear. I think I'm kind of in the same boat. And the other question I had for you is that you talk about having kids and telling them scary stories. So that just leads to this question is, do you have any thoughts about maybe writing sort of a scary kids book at some point?
Well, it's funny because I got an email from my editor. Now that I'm working my way into the ranks of young readers, my editor, Houghton Mifflin, emailed me, and she's like, look, you know, these Percy Jackson books, you know, my kids can't get enough of them. Have you thought about writing for younger readers? And, like, literally, the week before, I had been on a car ride with my kids telling them this story. My daughter's like, you should write a story called Alien Race. Like, that was her, my daughter's seven. She's like, it can be called Alien Race. I'm like, all right, well, how about if every few years, aliens of all different species find a planet that they do a round-the-world race on, and in the process, they destroy this planet, you know, sort of, and they pick a different planet every 4 years, and this kid finds out that this year they've picked Earth, and he starts finding these crazy, like, installations and tracks that are being set up in the desert, and he realizes, you know, that Earth has been chosen as this planet that's going to be destroyed in this multi-alien species round-the-planet race. And I told my editor about it. She's like, all right, well, that sounds like a good thing to start with. So something like that might be where I'd land next as far as just idea-wise. I mean, it definitely gives you a jumping-off place.
Great. No, that sounds good. And, you know, it's you know, you mentioned kind of having all these different things that you're working on. And even though they're all kind of, you know, sort of in slightly different genres and, you know, different sort of mediums, I think – It seems to be folded in nicely into what you are, though. It's like what you can bring to the table in all of these different things, and
right.
And you know, and it also says here in your bio that you're working on a film adaptation as well. Do you want to? Can you speak at all about that?
Yeah, that sort of came out of this whole, the whole Au Revoir Crazy European Chick thing was weird because it sold, and then within a week, Hollywood bought it, and there was a big bidding war, and crazy stuff went on, and I was being offered stuff that, you know, I'd never done before, and someone was like, well, there's this novel called Play Dead that's, like, about high school football that, you know, high school football players that turn into zombies. It's like Friday Night Lights meets Dawn of the Dead. Do you think you could do an adaptation of it? And I was like, okay. Because my experience in the past has been if I hadn't done it before, I generally say yes to it, and I end up doing kind of strange things because of that. But I got involved with some producers that are developing it, and I'm working on the script for that now. It's sort of the thing that I'm working hardest on, actually. I'm trying to get this thing done by the end of the year. So it's been a lot of fun. And, I mean, it's that weird combination of horror and comedy that you can really screw up if you don't do it right, you know. And if you do, but if you do it right, it can be very entertaining. So we're really working hard to make the tone of that, you know, something fun. But they're pretty serious about it. I guess they want to shoot it next year. So it would be cool if it actually happened.
Oh, great. Well, congrats. And have you done any other screenplays before? Is this your first time working on one?
Really just, I mean, here and there. I have a former college roommate who's a screenwriter out in L.A., and I've come out and helped him and consulted on some things in the past. And my feeling about Hollywood is there's, like, nothing else like it on Earth, but it's the most unstable place ever as well. Like, you really, to quit your job and be like, I'm going to be a screenwriter. Like, if you're 23 years old and that's what you want to do, that's cool, but if you're 41 with kids and a mortgage, like, that's just a suicide mission. So, I mean, it's a blast to go out there and have people take you out to lunch and tell you how, you know, what a genius you are. But at the end of the day, like, that's all, you know, so much talk. But, I mean, at the same time, there's a potential to do some really awesome, entertaining things and, you know, things that people hadn't done before. So it's definitely just a double-edged blade, I guess.
Oh, great. Well, Joe, you know, thanks so much for taking some time with us this morning. Why don't you throw out your website and, well, if you have anything else you want to mention, too. I think we kind of went over most of the stuff, but if you have nothing else you want to mention, why don't you tell people your website and Twitter and any other places that they can, you know, kind of check you out?
Yeah, my blog is www.scaryparent.blogspot.com, and that's a sporadically updated, randomly, you know, informed website about, you know, what's coming up and any signings I'm doing and just anything I feel like putting up. And I am on Twitter as well. If you Google me, the Twitter profile shows up, like, I think on the first page. So the Blogspot address is also in the books. I think Delray put it on the dust jacket of the Star Wars book, so it's there as well.
Great. Great. Well, Joe, thanks so much for taking the time this morning. And
hey, thank you.
Oh, yeah, and if you ever want to come on, you have a new project you want to do, just let us know, and we'll get you back on the show.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot.
All right, no problem. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
And we're back. Well, I hope you enjoyed that Joe Schreiber interview. last week on the podcast, I said that we were going to be interviewed, that this week's podcast would be Harry Turtledove. And you jinxed us. I totally jinxed it. Harry unfortunately had to cancel last minute, so we're going to try to reschedule him. But we had this, we were kind of fortunate because Joe was only able to do an interview on the weekend, so this was supposed to be next week's show, and Harry was supposed to be this week. But we're fortunate to have another big name author as Joe Schreiber to sort of fill in for the Harry Turtledove one. So that kind of worked out for us. And I'm not even sure who's going to be on next week now because it totally blew all my scheduling up. But I'm sure we'll get someone good. We got lots of cool people scheduled in January and February, so I think you're going to really dig some of the upcoming interviews. Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
Well,
besides your cold.
Yeah, no, the cold kind of kicked my butt. You know, I've got the recaps I've been doing. Those are over on technorati.com. I did have the post over on Grasping for the Wind this month. I've got some stuff over on SF Signal. All of that, you can usually find links to it at atfmb.com. So, I mean, you can just go there and then find me on the web. There's different links. Usual stuff at atfmb.com, random thoughts, conversations with my cat, photos. I had a really cool picture of a frozen waterfall.
I saw that. That was very cool.
Yeah, great. I thought that was neat. That was up on I-70 in Idaho Springs. So just, you know, usual stuff, twitter.com/atfmb, facebook.com/atfmb. That's where you can find me.
Great, great. Well, this week I have probably the last sort of appropriate week for this, but I have a new EP out up on Bandcamp called Seasons Geekings, featuring my Batman Smell song and my Millennium Falcon for Christmas song and Is a Chupacabra Kosher, amongst others. And you can go and download that at johnanilio.bandcamp.com. And as all of my stuff recently, it's a pay what you want. So if you want to throw me a couple of dollars, awesome. If you can't afford, download it anyway. I want you to listen to it and enjoy it. So please do that. Yes.
Did you listen to last week's episode all the way through the end?
I did. Yeah, so thank you for playing that there.
Well, I also put the little bit from Destination Truth with Josh Gates going out looking for the chupacabra.
Yeah, my son watches a Scooby-Doo chupacabra little movie, so yeah. I don't remember ever hearing about chupacabras until like the past 2 years, but...
You gotta live in an area with a greater Hispanic population.
Yeah.
See, I'm from California. We knew all about the chupacabra.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of talk of chupacabras up in New Jersey, so I think you need to live in a hot, dry place as well, too. I think that helps the chupacabra sightings.
Actually, the Jersey chupacabra, they spend a lot of time in tanning salons.
Oh, yes. Yes, we do.
That's where they get a lot of sightings.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're always wearing a muscle shirt.
Yeah, there's I don't know how it is in the rest of the country, but there's a Panera that I go to all the time, and there is a tanning salon right next to the Panera that I go to all the time. I've never been to a tanning salon, even though I am Italian, and yeah, no tanning salons for me. We're not all like that, people. Okay, most of us are not like that in New Jersey. Those are the people that we make fun of too. So anyway, so
it's a Jersey thing.
Of course. We take our lumps. We certainly do. But anyway, so I have that up. I have a new video up at wired.com where I teach how to play Chiron Beta Prime, the Jonathan Coulton Christmas song. So check that out. I also done some musical bumpers for the Wired Geek Dad podcast for their 12 Days of Geekmas. So if you go and listen to, you should go and listen to those anyways, and actually you should go right away because I think they're getting to the last couple of days. But they do these massive giveaways, like they gave out a PSP and all sorts of cool swag. And so they asked me to do 12 Days of Geekmas, so I did 12 bumpers of 12 Days of Geekmas. So that was a lot of fun. And so go check that out too, because that's some pretty neat stuff. And yeah, that's about it. So will this be our last episode before Christmas? I guess it will be, right?
Yeah, before Christmas. Yeah, this comes out Tuesday before Christmas.
All right. Well, for those of you who celebrate Christmas, Merry Christmas to you all. And yeah, and have a great holiday. And we should have an episode out between Christmas and New Year's. I just don't know who's going to be on it yet. So,
man, yeah, neither do I.
Yeah. I'm on Twitter too. So twitter.com/JohnAnilio. And that's about it. And yeah, have a great holiday. And we'll see you next week.
Mother went to the drugstore and put the ship on layaway. They told her that it would be ready in plenty of time for Christmas Day. But on Christmas Eve, it still wasn't there. I just wanted